What's the date, January 28th, 2026, 9 a.m. We are present for the annual meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board for the Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Jan, can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Barmore?
Here.
Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovak, not present as yet. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum.
Good morning again, everyone. We will get started with the agenda for the annual meeting. Item number one, introduction of newly elected and re-elected board members. I'd like to welcome Mr. John Barmore to the board. He was elected, obviously, last fall, and this will be his first meeting of 2020. Welcome to the board, Mr. Barmore, and go ahead with any word.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate those words. I look forward to getting back up to speed with everybody. I feel fortunate that I know everybody on the board, and Patrick's been very supportive and fantastic. It's good to have him on board as a new executive director, and I look forward to working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. And the other introduction is myself for the re-election of last fall as well. And just quickly say to everyone, I really look forward to another 4 years on the board. I just tell everyone I run into the collaborative nature of this board is second to none, and I really appreciate everyone's hard work and to be part of the team. So that will take care of item number one. Moving on to item number two, officers for the 2026 board year, letter A, election of the chair. Any comments or questions from board members regarding?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, is that Justin?
It's Tim.
Hey, Tim. Tim, go ahead. Oh.
Put forward a motion to keep you as the chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Do I have a second regarding?
Justin, second.
Thank you, Bill, for the second. And I believe I have to go through three other times to see if there was any other nominations regarding. Any other nominations for the election for the chair position? Any other nominations for the election of the chair position? And any other nominations for the election of the chair position? Not hearing any, there was a motion put forward and a motion by Tim for the election of myself for the position, followed by a second by Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the election of the chair will be myself, Matt Bell. I appreciate everyone for this confidence moving forward. Thank you. Item two, letter B, the election of vice chair. Any nominations for the position of vice chair? I would like to put one forward for Ed Kolbeck. Is there a second regarding that nomination for Nick Kolbeck?
Conrad seconds.
Thank you, Conrad. I will move forward with the three requests for nominations. Any other nominations for the vice chair for 2026? Any nomination for the election of vice chair for 2026? Finally, any nominations for the election of vice chair for 2026? I'm not hearing anybody have a motion to approve the vice chair for Mr. Nick Kovac. It was made by myself. It is seconded by anybody. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve Nick Kovac for vice chair of the board for 2026 passes. Moving on to item number three, approval of minutes. Letter A, regular meeting held December 23rd, 2025. Any comments or questions from board members or staff regarding the board minutes for December 2025? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes for December 2023, 2025 regular meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
This is Bill, I'll move approval.
Thank you, Bill. Do I have a second?
One more second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objection, motion to approve the minutes for the regular meeting held December 23rd, 2025 passes. Moving on to item four, the Chief Investment Officer Report. This simply will need us to go into closed session. David or Eric, what are your thoughts on when we would want to do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. It might make sense to do the closed session items first and then do the chief investment the performance updates after that. If there's no objection to doing that, I just have a quick language to read before we go into closed session, but I'll defer to you a little bit too if you have a preference on which to do first.
Great, I'll put us into a closed session. Did you say you just wanted to say something prior to going into closed?
I did, yeah. All right, now thank you. So for items 4A, 4B, and 4C, these three items are all related. One of our current investment managers has had some investment developments that staff believes are notable and would like to discuss with the committee and then request direction from the committee. These discussions need to be done in closed session for competitive reasons, so staff is requesting that the committee now convene in closed session. I'm sorry, I'm using the word committee. I should be using the word board. I apologize for that. So we need to discuss with the board and then request direction from the board. These discussions need to be done in closed session for competitive reasons, so staff is requesting that the board now convene in closed session to discuss this matter.
Great. Thank you, David. Any comments or questions before I read it and ask for a motion? All right, not hearing any, please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to convene in closed session on the following items, 4A or B and 4C, as provided in section 19.85 sub 1 sub E Wisconsin statutes to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require closed session. The board may then vote to reconvene in open sessions following the closed session. Do I have a motion to go into closed session?
Justin, I'll make the motion to go into closed.
Thank you, Justin. Do I have a second?
4 seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections regarding?
Mr. Chair, I believe a roll call vote is required.
Yes, sir. So go ahead, Jan, with the roll.
Mr. Barmore?
Aye.
Mr. Christensen?
Aye.
Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
Time is 9:10 a.m.
Thanks. Thank you.
All right, go ahead. Thank you, Terry. We are back in open session. And regarding items 4, A, B, and C, we have motions to consider. Let's start first with item A. Put forward a motion to approve a recommendation by Mr. Silver regarding investment manager as discussed in closed session. I will make the motion to approve. Do I have a second?
Barmore, second.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any objections? Not hearing any, the motion to approve recommendations by Mr. Silver regarding investment manager as discussed in closed session passes. Moving on to item B, I will put forth a motion to investment policy update as discussed in closed session. I'll make that motion. Do I have a second?
Ellen, second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections. Motion to approve the statement of investment policy update as discussed in closed session passes. Moving on to item C, I will make a motion to approve the real estate investment policy update as discussed in closed session. Do I have a second?
Board seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve the real estate investment policy update as discussed in closed session passes. Thank you, everybody. Moving on to item five, new business authorization to sign vouchers.
Wait, we didn't do our CIO report yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bounce back to, before we move on to item five, bounce back to item four. David, if you want to handle the actual CIO report.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, I feel it's a privilege to be able to provide this performance report on the fund for high level on 2025 and the start to 2026. As I mentioned, Eric's at a real estate. He usually gives us report. He's at one of the premier real estate conferences this week. We look forward to hearing what he learns when he gets back. I'll be giving the report today. So we did receive our last outstanding statement from UBS. It was overnight last night, so all the numbers aren't reflected by our custodian yet, but we feel really good about the estimates. We were able to update that all into this report this morning. So the fund value at the end of the year, we're looking at $6.38 billion. Our fund return in the month of December is 0.9% net of fees. Our return for the entire 2025 is now 12.9% net of fees. In December, we're showing underperformance of 47 basis points. That really gets masked by the way we treat private equity, which you'll see detracted 90 basis points. That means that there is a lot of positives going on in the rest of the portfolio. We talk about how we benchmark private equity a lot, and it really is responsible for the driving the relative returns and all the other time periods as well. But just to put this in perspective, our private equity portfolio had a 2.44% return in the fourth quarter. Our benchmark that we use was 8.58% because we benchmark it to the Russell 3000, which is a larger cap U.S. stock benchmark. And large U.S. stocks have done really well. For the year, we're looking at an 8.53% net of fee return for private equity. Again, that's actually pretty close to being in line with what Cowen's projections are. We benchmark it to 19.41%. So as Cowen says, our private equity managers are almost our main, the majority of them are in our top quartile or second quartile. It's more of an asset class. Private equity in these recent time periods are not keeping up with the U.S. large cap benchmark that we compare it to. And you saw that again in December in the year number. Without private equity, we outperformed for the year, for example, just like we outperformed in December. December was actually, talking about the positives, 11 of our 14 active mandates outperformed. We noted on here, DFA strategies combined added 10 basis points. Our overweight to private equity, the way attribution works is if you are overweight an asset class that you're using an 8.58% benchmark for, that's considered good for attribution, so that contributed as well. And you'll see 5-year, we're showing, 5- and 10-year, we are still, despite this private equity headwind, we're still showing outperformance. 15-year, it's very slight underperformance, and 20-year, slight underperformance as well. I think it's notable that the net of fee returns for 5, 10, and 15 are over 8%. If you go back 15 years ago in 2010, 2011, people were saying that wasn't going to be possible. A lot of advisors, experts. So that's notable, I think. For 2025, fixed income and absolute return asset classes outperformed their respective benchmarks, net of all fees. 8 of our 15 active mandates outperformed. That number 15 includes William Blair, who was underperforming when we moved on from them earlier this year. What does a 12.9% net of fee return mean in terms of dollars? $763.5 million is how much we attribute the fund going up for based on that return. We should all feel really good about that. That's a meaningful number. The fund outflows of $517.3 million. The vast majority of that is benefits. That includes some expenses as well. And we received meaningful $281.1 million in contributions. Moving on to just the first few weeks of January, fund is up 2.1% so far, just the first few weeks of this year. Fund value, I have to pinch myself when I say this, $6.72 billion. We've never reported a number that high at a meeting like this before. Just for kicks, I look back on December when we presented last year on December 31st, 2024, our fund value was $5.86 billion. Now we're reporting $6.72 billion. So if you just combine the numbers on this page, we've paid out $519.4 million. So that takes that $5.86 billion down to about $5.3 billion, right? So to get to 6.7, we've had almost $500 million, $493 million in contributions, and about $900 million in investment gains during this time period. 8 of our 11 active mandates are outperforming just in this short few weeks to start the year. Still a good start, though. 2.1% return is now equates to about $137 million in investment gains. We've received $206.7 million in contributions in this calendar year. And our first benefit payments will be made tomorrow. So if you get the Friday mailing, and it'll include that $41 million that we pay out every month. Very important money we pay out to all the beneficiaries. If we're below $6.7 billion, it might be because of that $40 million going out as well. I think the last thing I will note is that we have enough cash on hand to pay benefits from this month. That's my prepared remarks. I'm happy to take any questions if there are any.
Well, thank you, David.
No, Normal, I have a question for Mr. Silber.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, David, could you comment on the contributions and all the hard work you and your staff do to make the decision of how to allocate that between putting it to work or partially putting it into the cash allocation to pay benefits, and whether that's 1 month's worth? And I know there's a lot of things that could be going on in the world, whether it's an inverted yield curve or very high VIX. And I know you do a lot of work with that. We're going to have some large contributions, hopefully, every year going forward. So that's an important thing you do every year.
Thank you, John. I spend a lot of time on this, and I appreciate you giving me a chance to talk about it and recognizing that. I'd say, just as an anecdote, when we kind of created the deputy CIO structure, one of the rationales, it freed up my time to really look at strategy, strategic asset allocation, rebalancing cash flow management, because when you and I first started in this organization 20 years ago, I think we paid out about $20 million a month, and now we're paying up over $40 million a month, and that number's going to reach $60 million a month in a decade or more. So it's only going up. I look at this, I have spreadsheets that I'm looking at multiple times a day. They combine, I guess they incorporate our asset allocations targets, our asset class structures, which includes at the manager level, what's the target to each manager per structure. I can incorporate even on a really good day in the market, a really bad day in the market, I can incorporate an estimate of, I have the tools to say, okay, if the fund's up 40 million or 50 million today, or 40 or 50 million below today, or if the bond market's really moving, I can look at that in almost real time. And I'm also projecting benefit payments and capital calls and distributions for private equity and real estate and all of this as well. And I'm constantly running through scenarios in my mind. Okay, if stocks continue to go up, we'll do this for benefits next month. You know what, if stocks and bonds go down, you know, where would I take money from? If it's actually never, it's rarely a problem if something is going up. If stocks are doing well, it's easy to rebalance. Say you're rebalancing from stocks to pay benefits. If stocks are struggling but bonds are going up, you know, to a certain extent, you can always take the money from bonds too and say you're rebalancing. The real challenging periods are when both are going down and you're a long-term investor and you don't want to, you want to minimize the impact of realizing losses, right? Because we always have liquidity in the portfolio. It's more balancing the short-term cash needs with the long-term return risk objectives. So those are the things I spend the most time on, John, how are we thinking about, what am I going to do? What would I do, and am I comfortable with the options I have if stocks go down for the next 3 or 6 months or even the next year and bonds aren't playing their diversifying role? So, and every year is different. When rates were 0 or 1%, I would think about cash differently than I do now when cash is 3.5%, 4%, right? Even with the bond managers. I would say this year is a good scenario in my mind. I don't know if I could have designed it any better 6 months ago or 9 months ago. This organization spent a lot of time on a glide path that we approved in the first half of last year that increased our fixed income allocation from 29 to 32%. I was able to implement some of that, but again, because we're paying out $40 million a month and we're not getting big inflows, I was never able to implement the entire thing. I would have had to take a disproportionate amount of money in from stocks to do that. And I think I noted I took $380 million from stocks last year to do rebalancing and pay benefits. I felt like I was pushing things that was about as much that made sense to justify, but considering all the things we balance. And then on top of that, so I had an outstanding thing in fixed income that I was waiting for an opportunity to implement. And then this committee approved a new fixed income structure in November. And that really gave the final clarity on, okay, what do we want our fixed income allocation once we implement it to look like? So I had all that, and at the same time, stocks were doing really, really well. So the fund's doing well. We're in a really good spot. So it kind of made it easy when we got over $200 million in contributions. I wouldn't say I have the fixed income structure completely implemented yet, but we ended up moving, I want to get the numbers right. With all the money received at the end of 2025 and early 2026, we ended up putting $230 million into implementing our fixed income structure. and we still have a cash balance just shy of $100 million on hand. So that's gets us easily into March, and I feel really good about, okay, between the cash is the first place to go, our government bond index, which has a half a billion dollars into it, it's very liquid, would be the next place to go, and I've now been able to set aside the conservative, the core fixed income mandate that came out of that fixed income structure review has another couple hundred million dollars in it that's in an index fund right now waiting to be deployed when we finish that process. We're going into this year in a really good spot, and we're balancing out that overweight to private equity that we can't do anything about pretty well right now. So and there is a lot that goes into it, and every year it's a little different. Even every couple months it can be a little different, but that's kind of what led up to, those are probably the main considerations going into this year.
Thank you for your answer, David. One other real quick question is, on the contributions last year were $281 million, and this year it's showing $206 million, and on another slide, the city made some advanced contributions for others getting up around $230 million. What's the attribution to the difference between last year and this year contributions?
So I think, I mean, it's important to note that the 206 is not supposed to just where did you, just so we know, where did the 230 come from? I only put together the 206 in our, I think investment really only, I can say that the fund received in calendar year 2026, $206 million so far. Just so I want to make sure I answer the question.
I would have to scroll ahead. It was in the packet,
where that's coming from.
From 206 to 281.
Okay, so it's important to note that the 206 isn't just actuarial. The 281 would include the employee contributions that are made out of every paycheck throughout the year, which can be about $30 million per year. If I'm looking last year, it's contributions. Looks like sometimes we get agency sometimes we get city and agency contributions in July. Looks like in June or July we get a little bit. We also get a big chunk in December. I'm looking at last year's. We got, I would have to talk to the person who put the $230 million together to know that, so I'm not sure if I know have enough information to give you a great answer, but I can tell you that at this point in time, the investment team was calculating $213.5 million of inflows in our January month-to-date, which is pretty close to the $206 million, so what that tells me is that the difference is in terms of either the timing of when we received the actuarial contributions throughout the year plus the employee contributions that we'll be getting in every paycheck for the next, every other week in 2026.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, John. David, any other comments or questions for David? All right, not hearing any. Thank you again, David. Moving on from item 4, now to item 5, new business, letter A, authorization to sign. Patrick, are you handling this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is a standard annual housekeeping item that we put on the annual meeting in January of every year. Chapter 36 requires the board to authorize the signatories for signing vouchers, as well as authorizing transfers from the fund's custodian, Northern Trust. And the reason we put it on the January meeting is that we tend to get a new chair and vice chair, and just as a matter of governance, reviewing this once a year is a best practice. So This doesn't, I don't believe the current authorization changes. The board last revisited this in December to add me. Thank you very much. But other than that, given that we have the re-elected the chairman and vice chairman, the authorized signatories shouldn't change. So barring any questions, a motion to approve would be in order.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions? I'm not hearing any, Patrick. This doesn't require a motion, does it?
It does. It is a resolution, so technically it does require approval.
Awesome. Then I will put that forward. I will make a motion for the authorization to sign vouchers as discussed. Is there a second?
Barmore, second.
Thank you, John. Any objections? Not hearing any, motion to approve the authorization to sign vouchers as discussed passes. Thank you, Patrick. Moving into item 5, letter P, retirement, death claims, and refunds. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another routine item. This is the monthly list of payroll. If anyone has any questions or comments about anyone on the list, feel free to ask them now, or otherwise you can contact me offline. If there are no questions, another motion for approval is in order.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions, board members or staff? Not hearing any, I will put forth and make the motion to approve payroll for December 2025. Do I have a second?
This is Bill, I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve payroll for December 2025 passes. Moving on to item 5, letter C, conference request, January 28th, 2026 board meeting. We have three to discuss. First one is for Thomas Courtright, Morgan Stanley Global Real Assets, Los Angeles, in March. Estimated cost is $1,750. Next is for Eric Seller, Real Estate America's annual meeting. That's in New York in April. Estimated cost of $1,500. Next is for Keith Dickerson for the DFA Annual Institutional Symposium. That's in Texas, and that's also in April. Estimated cost is $1,850. Any comments or questions regarding requests for January 2026? Not hearing any, I will make a motion to approve the conference requests as listed for January 2026 board meeting. Do I have a second?
Justin, I'll second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the conference requests for January 2026 board meeting passes. Moving on, item 5, letter D, approval of 2025 securities lending budget. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another annual routine business item. The charter requires the board to sweep securities lending earnings from the expense fund into the combined fund each year. Otherwise, it reverts to the retirement fund, which is essentially, I believe, the GPS non-consenters fund. The board rules require that this action occur in January, which is why it's before you. And I believe our Chief Financial Officer, Dan Gopalin, has some additional comments to make.
Yeah, this is Dan. Good morning, everyone. Just a quick little background on our securities lending program. Patrick covered the mechanics of it really well. But the program, our securities lending program, is administered by our custodian, Northern Trust. Our securities lending program, it allows securities held in separate accounts with Northern Trust to be borrowed by other entities. The security borrowers then pay Northern Trust a premium for borrowing those shares. Northern Trust splits the income on a 80-20 split, meaning for every dollar of income, ERS gets 80 cents, and Northern Trust takes 20 cents in fees. The borrowers of Bar Securities are required to put up at least 102% of the market value of the borrowed securities as collateral. Generally, we require cash collateral from any borrowers. Going into the income and expenses for 2025, in 2025 we had about just under $868,000 of securities lending income, and we paid Northern Trust about $170,000 in fees. And then in January of last year, we also transferred $920,000 from the securities lending fund to the combined fund. That leaves us with an ending balance of $697,278. In order to prevent the funds from getting closed out to the non-contender funds, we'll just need to transfer $698,000 from the securities lending expense fund to the combined fund. On the final page, there's just a 10-year trend of our securities lending. Earlier in 2016 through 2019, our income was up over $1 million per year. It has gone down substantially. A lot of that was kind of due to how our asset allocation set up. We had lower number of securities held in separate accounts, and we also have higher collateral requirements than other lenders. A lot of other lenders allow non-cash collateral such as stocks or bonds. Looking at comparing 2025 to 2024, the difference, the lower income of about $220,000, could be attributed to lower market premiums for the borrowed securities. The premiums that we charge, you know, the borrowers for having our securities. It was down about 12 basis points, the premium, in 25 when compared to 2024, which was a difference of about $260,000. So yeah, we're just looking for an approval to transfer $698,000 from the securities lending fund to the combined fund. Any questions?
Thank you. Dan, any questions regarding? Okay, not hearing any, I will put forth a motion to approve the 2025 security lending budget and transfer funds as discussed. I'll make that motion. Is there a second?
One second.
Thank you, John. Any objections regarding? I'm hearing any motion to approve the 2025 security lending budget and transfer monies as discussed passes. Thank you, Dan. Moving on to item 5, letter E, consider and potentially take action on suspension of duty disability retirement benefits for Duran Gillum. Pastor, you on the line?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Bell. Good morning, everybody. Before you is a memo summarizing our experience with Mr. Gillum this past year during his annual re-exam. Kind of describes what we've experienced with him. We felt it was getting to the point where we needed to bring it to the board's attention that we essentially are getting no cooperation with him with the required annual reexamination, and to give it to you to consider and maybe take action as part of your role. Is there any questions about what's in the memo? I'd be happy to take them now. However, I try to stay away from a more granular look at it in an open session because it might reflect upon private health information that I would not want to talk about in an open session.
Mr. Chair, I have just a couple of additional comments.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you. I just want to remind the board that Chapter 36 expressly authorizes it to suspend benefits for disability beneficiaries who are non-compliant with their reexamination requirements. This happens periodically. which leads me into my second comment, which is really, and I said this before in my capacity as ERS's counsel, that you know, under Mr. Petropoulos's leadership, the disability program has really, I guess, tightened up and is being extremely well run. Historically, there were some issues with it, and there was more non-compliance than we experience at this point. So I do just want to give Gus a nod that he has really righted the ship, for lack of a better phrase, and tightened things up, and is doing an excellent job running this program. And this request to the board is part of that maintenance of effort and enforcing the obligations that the charter requires.
I appreciate those comments, Patrick. I would note that it is much rarer now to experience non-compliance. However, we do have certain individuals that, for lack of a better term, are all-stars. So Mr. Gillum certainly qualifies. And frankly, he probably is the last person we suspended as well. It would have been a couple of years ago, or maybe even beyond that.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Gus. Any other comments or questions? I'd just also like to thank Dustin's team for the thoroughness and the memorandum documenting everything. Makes our understanding of the issue and that level of thoroughness apparent. So thank you, Gus, to you and your staff. Would this then be a motion, not doing these often, would this be a motion to suspend the duty disability benefits for Daron Gillum? Is that what we would need, Patrick?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I should note before you take motions that if Mr. Gillum comes into compliance, he would be brought made whole for the time that he's suspended. However, if he is under suspension for a year, you would have the option to cancel his benefit altogether after that. Just to note that.
Thank you, Gus. I will put forth a motion to approve the suspension of duty disability for duty disability retirement benefits for Daron Gillum. Do I have a motion to approve?
Conrad seconds.
Thank you, Conrad. I put the motion forward. Mr. Conrad made the second. Any regarding? Not hearing any objections, motion to approve the suspension of duty disability retirement benefits for Daron Gillum passes. Moving on to item 5, thank you, Beth. Moving on to item 5, letter F, annual obligations of trustee and ERS officers to submit annual statements of economic interest. We do have this in the package. Patrick, do you want to discuss?
Just very briefly, Mr. Chair, this is, it's that time of year again. As I believe everyone on the board knows, by city ordinance, city officers and various other officials are required to file the statement of economic interests. It's due on February 28th, and there are late fees attached to it if it's not in on time, so please make sure you do get them in by February 28th. And the only other thing I'll mention is that there's an online option available, which makes it easy, and it submits itself. If you need a copy of last year's statement, you can reach out to the Ethics Board and they'll provide you a copy. Sometimes it makes it easier just to have last year's handy. So outside of that, yeah, no approval is required. It's just a reminder for the trustees.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments from board members regarding the statement of economic interest? I think we have a few meetings in between now and then, so if we can just have a reminder, please, as we move forward. Moving on to item 6, medical reports, letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for January. Go ahead, Patrick.
I think Mr. Petropoulos will be handling this item.
Yes, and there are two reports before you, the medical panel approvals report and the medical council approvals report. There are no denials this month. Two reexams on the medical panel approvals report and five reexams on the medical council approvals report and one new application for ordinary disability by Ms. Spangler. It's recommended for your approval as well. I would note under Mr. Bruno, it notes exempt under in-person exam waiver. It simply means that he's aged out and will be converting from, or no longer required to be undergoing re-exams going forward. And that's
thank you, Gus.
Both reports are before you for your approval.
Thank you, Gus. Any comments or questions from board members? Not hearing any, I'll put forth a motion to approve medical reports for January 2027. Tim?
Colin, I'll second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections? Not hearing any, motion to approve medical reports for January 2026 passes. Moving on to item 7, unfinished business. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our newly assigned assistant city attorney, Lori Rawlings, to the team, and I want to give her a chance to introduce herself. Go ahead, Attorney Rawlings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, board members. It's a pleasure to work with you. I have been newly appointed to the city attorney's office. This is the beginning of my third week on the job, so I'm very excited about working with you all. Previous to joining the city attorney's office, I spent 10 years as an executive director of Construction Contractor Associations, and in that capacity, I served as a trustee on multi-employer pension fund. So I'm intimately familiar with the difficult decisions you need to make as fiduciaries on a daily basis, and I'm excited about assisting you in any way that I can. Prior to that, I was in municipal government. I was a senior staff attorney at Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, so I'm excited to be back working in municipal government, and I have some other legal experience beyond that, but I think those are sort of the two most relevant things to my role here, so I'm very excited to work with all of you and pleased to be on board.
Great, thank you. And again, welcome to the team.
Thank you.
I will open your way for item 7, letter A, pending legal opinion and service request report. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to legal opinions, we're still in a continuing to monitor situation with regard to collection of delinquent city agency employer pension contributions. Patrick has previously advised on this matter that we have looked into whether or not it would be feasible or sensible to pursue litigation to recover delinquent contributions from the housing authority. And at this point, we are confident, based on advice that we've received from outside counsel, that our current policy of remaining in communication with them and continuing to receive payments as they are available is probably the correct course of action at this point. Other than that, I don't have anything else to report. Are there any questions or anything that Patrick would like to add?
I think Lori summed it up pretty well. And just to remind the trustees and for the benefit of Mr. Barmore, who may or may not have been present at the meetings where this was previously discussed. We have, when I was at the city attorney's office, consulted on this issue with Ice Miller, which is our outside tax counsel, and also did some consulting with some other retirement systems who've been in a similar boat. And between those two consultations and our discussions within the city attorney's office, we determined that continuing to work with Hackam, as long as they're, you know, ready, willing, and able to do so, and they've indicated that they are, continuing to work with them to collect contributions on an ongoing basis is really the best way to proceed. So Lori and I have had a discussion about this. It's certainly something we'll continue to monitor. And if there aren't any other questions, we'll continue to provide updates as they develop.
I have a question on that, Mr. Chair Barmore.
Sure, I think I heard Rudy first.
Sure,
Rudy, and then
Doug. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if we should just maybe delete this item from the legal opinion requests until such time as we actually need it. I think it's difficult to write this kind of opinion without an actual set of facts in front of you, which we would have if this continues. But since we are in the process of attempting to get payments, and it appears we will, having this on the agenda every month seems pointless. And also, I question, and I asked for this a while back, but now I question whether it's wise to write an opinion that may not really give us much direction or raise more questions than it answers, especially doing it in a situation where we might actually have to engage in litigation to collect some of the funds, or to collect the funds. Is that clear?
It is. And Mr. Chair, I have some additional comments if that's okay.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Rudy makes a really astute observation, and Lori and I did discuss this very issue just yesterday. As Rudy indicated, it's really hard to write a legal opinion on a moving target, essentially. And I think that his suggestion is probably a good one. We can certainly ask for another legal opinion should we ever get to the point where one becomes appropriate. And I think in terms of keeping the board apprised of this issue, I'd certainly be happy to include any updates in my executive director's report or as an individual agenda item, depending on, you know, what the new information was. So I guess this is my way of, I think Rudy's suggestion is a good one, and I would support it.
Thank you, Rudy. And Patrick, any thoughts regarding or move forward with Rudy's recommendation?
Mr. Barmore?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, thanks. My question dovetailed somewhat with what Rudy and Patrick said. My question was going to be, how do you quantify the situation as far as benchmarks moving forward versus the qualitative comment of we're going to work with these agencies going forward? Because it's very open-ended. And so if you took it off the agenda with the understanding that there were some benchmarks put in place that could land it back on the agenda, and then we could move forward from there.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, benchmarks is probably too formal of a word to describe. I think that anyone who reads the news can see that Hackam's current financial situation is rather dire. I don't know candidly if it's even feasible to predict the pace of additional contributions and amounts as they would come in. So some of the initial guidance that the city attorney's office gave last year was that, you know, requiring specific benchmarks or milestones for Hackam to hit is probably not only infeasible, but probably counterproductive at this point. Just to remind everybody listening, the contributions that HACM is making after their due date are subject to an interest rate at the fund's discount rate of 6.8%. So to the extent that we are receiving these contributions after their due date, we are receiving interest, which effectively makes the plan whole. And so to tie all this up, you know, the guidance that the city attorney's office has given is that as long as HACM is, you know, essentially indicates its willingness to continue to make contributions as it is able and acknowledges its legal obligation to do so and does in fact continue to make those contributions, that that's really the best course of action to take rather than litigation, which is both costly, consumes time, and then potentially just puts you back in the same position that you were in pre-litigation, only now you've just paid for a lawsuit. So to tie that up in a bow, I'm not sure benchmarking is feasible. I'd certainly invite our Chief Financial Officer, Dan Gopalan, to add any comments he may have regarding it, but I'm not confident that that would be a course of action that would be fruitful, candidly.
Yeah, this is Dan Gopalan. Previously, we kind of had them on a quarterly payment plan. They missed some of their payments towards the end of the year, so yeah, I think maybe we could check in at least quarterly with them. I try to check in with them on a monthly basis. They do have a little bit of change happening in their organization. They're currently doing a search for their new executive director, and I believe that their chief financial officer just recently left as well. So as of right now, I'm kind of waiting for those positions to kind of get filled so we can start working, you know, formally on a plan to get this paid off.
Yeah, and this is Pat McLean again. Just to, you know, this is an ongoing weekly, at least, conversation in our office. This is not something that falls off our radar. I will mention, just as a recap, that HACM was doing, was complying with the original quarterly payment schedule until there was, they are heavily reliant on grant funding. And there was a disruption of that at the federal level, which caused them to experience essentially cash flow issues, and they became unable to make the promised contribution, which was, of course, outside of their control. They don't control, you know, when they get the grants. So, I guess I want to provide assurances to the board that this is something that we talk about continuously, and is something that we will continue to monitor moving forward. But if there is an appetite on the board for a formal reporting structure or regular item, we'd certainly be happy to accommodate that. We want to make sure that we're satisfying that need.
Thank you, everyone. Does that help, John, as far as what you were thinking?
Barmore again. Well, I don't want to argue semantics with a lawyer, but...
Good call.
You know, there's ways around the language. You use the word may instead of the word must, and I learned that from Rudy Conrad, another lawyer that I appreciate. I don't like having it open-ended. If there was some process to report back, possibly just as an idea to move it to the executive director's report or something, I don't like leaving it open-ended.
No, I completely understand that. That was exactly my plan, was to capture this in the executive director's report moving forward. Mr. Barmore, I can connect with you offline. I'll forward some of the communications that we've been having with HACM over the last 6 months or so. There was quite a bit of discussion at the board during that time period, and I'm happy to fill you in offline on the way we proceeded and have further discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for the discussion. We move on to item 7, letter B, the pending legislation report. It looks like there's just a few things under part 2 and part 4. Patrick, are you handling that, or Laurie?
I'll handle that, Mr. Chair. We do have two proposed rule changes that were referred to the Legislative Committee in December. We expect to be scheduling a Legislative Committee meeting in February, likely before the board meeting, so stay tuned on that. And then for part four of the report, this is the reference to the proxy voting legislation that is being debated at the state level. There aren't any updates. I did just check yesterday. Those bills are still in committee. I don't have any updated information regarding how viable they are, but just within the last 72 hours, a new bill was introduced at the state level relative to proxy advisory firms. It's not on the report, obviously, because it was introduced after the report was sent out, but that new legislation directly targets proxy advisory firms rather than putting sort of the regulatory onus on the pension plans within the state, WRS, the county, and of course our plan. And so I'm curious, and I'll follow up with our representatives at the city to see if they have any insight on this, if maybe the legislature is looking to go in a different direction and you know, put some of these regulations on the advisory firms themselves rather than on the pension plan. But that's just speculation on my point. I did want to share it because it was a notable development, and I'll certainly have more for you on that issue next month.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions? Not hearing any, thank you. We'll move on to item 7, letter C. It does discuss possibly going to the closed session. Patrick, do you think we need to?
No, I don't see any reason for that. Lori and I did talk about these yesterday, so I'll just handle it briefly. There's no movement from last month. As I indicated in December, we are in a holding pattern on all of these cases. We're essentially waiting for decisions from the Court of Appeals. So stay tuned, but no movement as of yet. It's a long process.
Thank you. Any comments or questions for Patrick regarding pending litigation report? Not hearing any. Move on to item 7, letter D, Executive Director's Report, Inventory of ERS Projects. Go ahead for your first report, Patrick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you indicated, this is my first report. I'm very pleased to be delivering it today. The first item there, personnel update, we do have one vacancy to fill, the Benefit Services Coordinator position. This is, I believe, will be the last in the daisy chain of internal promotions that began when Katrina Bailey was promoted to the newly created Human Resources Administrator position. So we're very pleased to see our existing people moving into new roles, and we look forward to filling that soon. So that will be posted internally, I believe, before the week is out. Moving on to Section 2, Member Services. We had 24 new retirees on payroll in December and are expecting 35 in January. There is a new police recruit class starting on December 8th, 2025 that will have 35 new police officers. Those will not be ERS members, but that's notable because the city's receipt of sales tax money under Act 12 is contingent upon them continuing to increase police and fire staffing levels. Mike Juke, our benefits coordinator, has set up 6 workshops for this year, 4 for general city, 2 for protective services. So if you have any questions about those or want more information, please reach out and we'll make sure Mike gets back to you. Section 3, financial services, we successfully transferred the 1099-R forms to both the state and the IRS yesterday, and those will be mailed out before the end of the month. Relative to some discussion earlier in the meeting, the ERS did take in employer contributions totaling approximately $230 million. Additionally, the city also contributed $6.8 million on behalf of the agencies. As the board will recall, Act 12 authorized the use of sales tax money to cover the increase in normal costs for city agencies, and this $6.8 million represents that amount for the current contribution. The city pays that directly to the retirement system. I will also note that MPS only makes a partial payment, but that's routine. They do that every year, and we are still obviously waiting on contributions from Hackam and also MATC. Moving to section four, informational or information services. The only thing I want to mention there is actually something you don't see, and that's that the merits refresh went extremely well. I did talk to our chief technology officer, Jeff Schober, this morning, and he wanted me to mention that the merits process is wrapping up, and he's pleased with the results. Finally, in Section 5, Administration, as Mr. Bell just indicated, we are very happy to be welcoming Assistant City Attorney Lori Rawlings. As my predecessor did, I am in constant contact with her, and I don't anticipate that to change moving forward. We truly are very happy to have her on board. I will be attending the Milwaukee Retired Police Association's next meeting. This continues a trend that began last year when I attended the Milwaukee Retired Fire and Police Association meeting. I'll be also attending the Milwaukee Retiree Association meeting in April. And I, you know, I view this as an important part of my role, introducing myself to these associations and meeting the membership. I think it's important for everyone to understand who's in charge and to be able to put a face with the name. I want to thank Trustee John Barmore for setting these up. I really appreciate it. I really do enjoy getting out and meeting the leaders of these associations as well as the retirees, so thank you for that, John. And then finally, I'll just mention that a report of the ERS's results for goals and objectives for 2025 is included in the report, along with the new goals and objectives for 2026 and summaries of the member service data for 2025. And just to not put too fine a point on it, there is an additional reminder for the to file your statements of economic interests before the due date on February 28th of this year. Barring any questions, that will conclude my report.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? I'd just like to say thanks for including in there the progress reports of the goals. So many times we hear about the goal, we don't really hear about them again. So I appreciate you doing that and documenting that in the packet. And that will conclude item 7, letter T. Move on to 7 E, approval of 2026 Annual Committee Audit Charter. Tim, do you want to handle that, or do we have Patrick?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll introduce it, and I'll invite Mr. Gopalan to jump in if he has anything additional. But this is the occurs once a year. This is the formal delegation by the board to the A&O committee to oversee the financial audit. There are no substantive changes to the audit charter from last year other than updating the dates. There is some important background I think is worth noting. As most of the trustees will recall, prior to Act 12, the A&O committee played played the role in selecting the auditors, reviewing the audit scope and approach, and pre-approving audit services. Obviously, Act 12 significantly modified that arrangement by creating a statutory obligation for ERS's financial statements to be audited by the State Legislative Audit Bureau. Over the last 2 years, Mr. Gopalan and his team have worked really hard to reach an arrangement with LAB that satisfies, you know, their statutory obligations, but also maximizes the ERS's continued oversight role throughout the process. And have done a really great job with this charter. In that vein, there's just a couple of things that I want to note. that the LAB is subject to statutory confidentiality requirements. So normal communications that we would usually have received regarding the audited financial statements cannot occur with the LAB just because of their statutory requirements to keep those items confidential until after they publish their final report. And then additional to that, the audit charter does confirm that the board will comply with Act 12, clarifies that the board retains the authority to determine the reasonableness of the LAB, the Legislative Audit Bureau's fees for the audit, and also authorizes staff to execute the audit engagement letter. So that's the end of my summary. If Dan has anything to add, I'd invite him to do so now.
No, Patrick, you did a great job of explaining and hitting all the points that we wanted to hit.
So pending, if there aren't any questions, a motion to approve would be in order.
Thank you, Patrick. And any comments?
This is Bill. I just got one quick question. It's actually the last bullet point caught my eye. One of the reporting responsibilities of the committee is to evaluate the committee's and individual members' performance on a regular basis and report to the board. I guess I don't recall that happening before, and is that what form is that expected to take? I'm just a little curious about that.
Sure. Dan, can you speak to that piece?
That's a good question. I think it's more of just making sure that, you know, the members of the A&O committee are, you know, paying attention to things. I think that's the biggest item, and just aware of what's going on and with our administrator and operations of ERS. We could set up something, some type of formal program, either through like a survey or something.
I'm not pushing one way or another. I was just, you know, it's on here, and I was just wondering if there was any, you know, sort of guidelines or guidance on what that would actually look like. We can maybe talk about that at an A&O committee, yeah. If that would be appropriate.
Yeah, I think this is Pat McLean again, just jumping in. I think that would be appropriate. Obviously, the chair of the A&O committee does report to the board at the conclusion of this process, and I think that this last bullet is really captured usually in that report, although perhaps not formally. There's not a separate document or anything that discusses it, but it is generally part of the discussion. I'd certainly be happy to follow up with you offline if you would like to see a certain product that we can include as a regular part of that.
Well, I mean, I just want to make sure that, you know, whatever we're stating is required of the A&O committee here, that we, you know, have a method or means of following up on. So that's all. But yeah, we can either talk offline or at A&O.
Mr. Chair, Bob Barmore with a question.
You bet, John. Go ahead.
Just kind of a detail-y point of order, you know, Robert's rules and all that stuff. I always like seeing, even on the charter updates, even if it's only the date change, I like seeing the red line. And as the trustee, it's easier to process the information and knowing what you're looking at for changes from the last year.
Certainly we can do that. If the board wants to delay approval of this item, we do have some leeway. I believe we used to approve this in May at the May meeting, but with the change from with the LAB, it got moved up to the January meeting over the last 2 years, and we've just sort of kept it there. So we do have quite a bit of runway for this item. So if the board would like to see a red line, I'm certainly happy to do that. We can bring it back at a future meeting.
So moved.
Yeah, so we'll be it next month then, John. Is that your preference?
Yes, please.
Sounds good. Thanks, Patrick, if you can put that back on the agenda for next month.
Will do.
Any other comments or questions on item 7, letter E? All right, not hearing any. Harry, I was going to check with you. Did Nick end up joining the meeting?
Yes, he did. He's on.
You there? Just wanted to let you know that you were nominated again and chosen for vice chair of another board. So.
Yes, thank you. I've been on for about an hour and happy to serve.
Great. Appreciate it. And that is it for moving on to item 8, informational. We have files A through J to consider. Are there any questions? If not, we'll make them informational, but throw it out to board members or staff for any comments regarding. Right, not hearing any, those items A through J will be placed on file, and with that, we'll entertain a motion to conclude this board meeting. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Justin, I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
I heard Justin first, Nick second. Any objection to adjournment? Aaron, any of this meeting is adjourned at 11:12 a.m. Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.